Welcome to the fifth session of our class on successive themes in the Buddha Dhamma. And currently we are in the middle of discussing a theme that is enlightenment or awakening. And last week started our discussion on the paramitas. We have already discussed three paramitas, two paramitas, dana and sila. Today's discussion would be, it's going to be on Nekkhamma, that is Nekkhamma, 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 meaning renunciation. The third paramita is about renunciation, renouncing or removing or letting go. That the renunciation means. Let's, as usual, let's start our discussion with the etymology of the term Nekkhamma. So the term it is derived from the root kram, 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 with the prefix ni. The prefix ni plus kram, 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 ni plus kram, that is the root. Kram is the root, and you add the prefix ni to the root kram. Now, kram literally means walk around, to walk around or to circle around. Kram. Kram means to walk around or circle around, or like you move in a circle. Imagine that you are as though you are circumambulating. You walk around something. So that is the root kram means. Now, kram is to circle around, to walk around, and ni, the prefix ni, turns the meaning into the opposite one. So that means ni kram means you stop circling around, you stop walking around, and you leave the circle. That is what renunciation means. Now let's discuss this in detail. When you like something, when you are obsessed with something, not simply liking, when we are obsessed with something, you can't stop thinking about it. That's all about the obsession. So later in a later discussion, we will discuss the seven obsessions, anusayas. Of course, we had several times we discussed the topic, anusayas, the seven latent tendencies, or the seven latent obsessions that always put us in trouble. For now, just keep that term in your head. So the latent tendencies of the mind. Now, so when you're obsessed with something, you can't stop thinking about it unless you get it for yourself. Unless you are able to achieve it and experience yourself, you can't stop that. Idiomatically, that is what walking around means. Kram. To walk around something, to circle around. So that is what the root means idiomatically. And when you stop circling around, when you stop walking around something, meaning you walk away from the circle. So that is what Nekkhamma or renunciation means. And you can better understand it with the idea of samsara. Samsara is always imagined to be like a circle. You come back to the circle again and again. Samsara. Samsara is always depicted as a circle. So every moment in your daily life, and also in your daily life, you think about the same thing. You walk around the same thing again and again, like samsara. But you are not happy still. Then what happens is you continue to do that until death. Upon death, you will continue to circle around. You will continue to walk around again, the same thing, similar, this almost the same thing. Whichever that you used to circle around, walk around during your life, this lifetime, you will come back to the same. That's called the repetition. You repeat it, and that is called samsara. So, and that is in samsara is successive births, deaths, and rebirth, and death again, and so forth. Continue. Now, see, always nekkhamma is better understood. The paramita of nekkhamma paramita is better understood with the idea of by in comparison with samsara. So again, samsara, as we discussed in our previous sessions, it has nothing to do with our past or the future. However, in Buddhist spirituality, most people would refer to their past samsara, or and then they talk about their frustrations about their past, maybe within this the past within this lifetime or past life. Or then what happens is they are not happy with what they are right now. Then they would start talking about how they want to come back to the circle again in the future, in the afterlife. So that's always when you refer to, whenever you refer to the past, most people, and you do that in frustration. And then when you refer to the future, you are very hopeful. You are already dreaming about it, but the underlying your dreaming is frustration again. Why? In your subconscious mind, you compare your future with the past. And most of the time, you miss the present. That is why living in the present moment is very difficult. I think it's the most difficult thing in the world. Automatically, quite naturally, our mind would prefer the past over the present, prefer the past and the future over the present. So that is because we are not happy with what we have already achieved. We call some an achievement. When you have achieved something, you call it an achievement, quote unquote, only for a short period of time. Then you stop calling it an achievement. Why? Because you don't like it anymore. You need something else. Maybe you need the same thing in a different way. So that you start looking for something else. Then you may, as a result, you may either return to the same thing to enjoy it the same way, or return to the same thing to enjoy it a different way. Or you will return to something else to start a totally new way of experience. And then you will continue that for some time, then you will leave it and come back. So that is why nekkhamma paramita, the paramita of renunciation, seems one the most difficult one. It looks easy, but that is the most difficult one. And also these paramitas are interconnected for dana. Dana, as we talked about dana paramita, the first one. It's very difficult to give, to share. Why? Because we remain attached to what we have already achieved, to what we are planning to achieve. Attachment occurs before achievement always. Whether or not you have already gained something for yourself, acquired something for yourself, whether or not you have done that, you still remain attached to something all the time. Now, so that's the interconnection between dana paramita and the third one here today, the nekkhamma paramita. Again, nekkhamma, it comes from the root kram, 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 meaning to walk around, to circle around. And when you use it, prefix ni, it becomes an antonym. That's the opposite then. You stop circling around, you stop walking around. So that's why nekkhamma. Now, and I know you are also familiar with Samma sankappa, right resolve, right thought, which is part of the Noble Eightfold Path. So at this point, we are not going to discuss the entire Noble Eightfold Path. Somehow, Nekhama is connected to one of the eight factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. That is Samma Sankappa, starting with Samma Ditti, right view, Samma Sankappa, right thought to right resolve, the second one. So Nekhama Paramita is directly connected with Samma Sankappa, right resolve or right thought. How? According to the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutra and the Sacchibhanga Sutra and many other sutras, this is how Samma Sankappa is defined. Samma Sankappa, right resolve, right thought is threefold. The first one is Nekhama Sankappa. See, yeah, you come back with Nekhama again. I will go through Pali first. Nekhama Sankappa, Avyapada Sankappa, Avihinsa Sankappa. Nekhama Sankappa, again, you know the spelling already. Nekhama Nekhama Sankappa is Sankappa Sankappa. Sankappa Sankappa. Sankappa. So that's Sankappa means right. Sankappa is resolve or thought. But in old ways, in Buddhist, in Pali Buddhism, most of the, I mean, almost every term has two meanings, root meaning and the functional meaning. Remember, you see the pattern, right? In our previous discussion, we would always, whenever we talk about a term, and we would always identify, we'd always learn the root meaning and the functional meaning. Two different. Always the functional meaning is in an ethical sense. Root meaning is in general, in a general psychological sense. Sankappa. Now we're going to talk about Sankappa a little bit because of its connection with Nekhama. Now this is the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. Sankappa, right resolve. And we always use Samma, meaning right. We all have sankappas, we all have resolves, we all have thoughts. But unless it is ethical, it is not spiritual. Samma sankappa. Sankappa. Let's also discuss the word sankappa. Lot of Pali again. I don't know if you're going to like it or not. I would say sorry, I don't know what to say. Anyway, this is on etymology also, sankappa. As you know, the purpose of this advanced class is to also to learn the etymology, the original terms, so that in your future readings you should be able to refer, when you read books on different subjects, you should be able to figure out whether a certain author has distorted the translation, whether it's a distorted translation or the correct translation. So that's the purpose. And also, please go back and investigate and come back to me and say, hey Bante, you wrote this wrong. So I'm always like to get corrected by you, because we, what we need is to learn the Dhamma in a way that it is not distorted, the correct meaning. So Sankappa, Sang is again a prefix. Sang means sound, lit. Sang basically means together, meaning when we talk about forming something, creating something, producing something, we have to put certain conditions together. If not, it is always with because of based on more than one reason, one cause, that something is made, something comes into being, something arises, something is produced. That's what sang here means. Sang is always sang. Basically means together, like few causes and conditions put together, and something comes into being. So that's what sang means. And kappa comes from the root club, KLP. It's an abbreviated form, KLP, club. Meaning, upper. Maybe I would like to let you know something. Monks living in forest, like forest monks, not in monks living in urban settings, like in villages. Most forest monks would always have someone to come and to come over and offer them requisites like food, and they would always say kappiyang bante, kappa. They use the word kappa. Kappa means Kappa, kappa means suitable, prepared. So kappa literally means something prepared for a specific purpose. For example, like this year, a forest monk who always needs someone to offer him food, and he has to come forward and say, "Bante, this is good for you. This is suitable for you." Kappiyang. Kappiyang means suitable. This has been prepared for you in the way that you can enjoy it, you can consume it. So that's what the kappa means suitable or prepared for a specific purpose. So when you put sankappa, meaning based on reasons for or a multitude of causes or multitude of reasons for a multi for a one single cause or a one reason or a multitude of reasons and based on conditions, so you prepare something. Now at this point, you prepare your mind. That's what sankappa means, right? That's what the sankappa means. Sankappa means thought or resolve. So sammasankappa means you prepare your mind for a specific purpose, but in an ethical way, in a moral way. So that is what sankappa means. See, we had a long way to explain that. Explaining that sammasankappa. Sankappa is to prepare some. So you prepare your mind. That's what sankappa means. Unless your thought is ethically prepared, you will put the wrong thought into action, so that you will see the wrong results. So that's when sankappa, and you also had samma, right sankappa, right thought. Now, a criminal also has a sankappa. A serial killer would do everything possible to get his next victim. So he uses his sankappa. He specifically prepares. He prepares his mind for a specific reason. At this point, to capture another victim. I mean, in the case of serial killer, a criminal. So at that point, it has nothing to do with ethical things, like a thief. Whereas we always in spiritual practice, we definitely use the adjective samma, right. Right sankappa, right resolve, right thought. So otherwise, it's not ethical. Now the sankappa is threefold again. The first one is nekkhamma. So the thought, the right thought of renunciation. That's the first one, nekkhamma. Second one is the right thought of. I'm not going to give you any more Pali for this. That's too much otherwise. We should continue the discussion instead. Now, the first, so the sammasankappa, the right resolve, right thoughts are divided into three. So the first one is nekkhammasankappa, the right thought of renunciation, and that is interrelated, connected with nekkhammaparamita here. And the second one is avyapada. I will just spell it out: AVYAPA. Long A D A A V Y A long A P A long A D A Avyapada. Avyapada means goodwill. Goodwill. The right thought of goodwill. Second one. And the third four third one second one is goodwill. Third part of sammasankappa is avihinsa, AVIHINSA. NSA long A. AVIHINSA long A. Avihinsa, harmlessness. Avihinsa also means non-violence. In fact, it comes from Sanskrit and Pali, avihinsa. So that's harmlessness. Here, the sammasankappa, you wouldn't be able to practice or complete sammasankappa, the right thought, unless you practice all the three areas of sammasankappa, all the three aspects of sammasankappa. You have to complete the renunciation. You have to think about giving up what you don't need if you practice sammasankappa. For example, if you want to bring all your car, your house, your property, except mortgage, so whatever you have, all your assets to the next life, to the afterlife. So you will never be able to practice nekkhamma. So you have to let go of a lot of things, and we will, the next step, we will discuss how to do that nekkhamma paramita. Now, so, and also you need to, you have to stop create, you have to stop creating feelings of ill will. Instead, you have to practice goodwill. That's avyapada. And then you need to, you are not supposed to have, you have to avoid having harmful feelings, feelings that are hard towards yourself or anyone to the other, and that's harmlessness. So the sammasankappa is completed by practicing renunciation, by practicing goodwill, and by practicing harmlessness. These three aspects are the are of complete the practice of sammasankappa, the right thought. Now, why we went that far explaining this is because of sammasankappa's connection with the third paramita, nekkhamma. So do you see, and all the fundamental teachings of the Buddha are interrelated and interconnected. They are all interconnected. This is one such interconnection, sammasankappa. So the nekkhamma, practice of nekkhamma, for let's look at nekkhamma sankappa with reference to the first part of sammasankappa here. Sorry, nekkhamma paramita. So let's say you used to, you drink, you have your favorite signature brand of coffee or tea. This monk always talks about food, like the ice cream. Let's say you've been drinking your favorite coffee for the last 15 years or so, and this morning you didn't get that. And this is the first time in 15 years that you miss your coffee this morning. And you got the first thing is the first reaction, why? Why? Why didn't I get this? And perhaps there are, if there were some people involved, and they, and then probably you put the blame on them too, or probably you curse yourself. Oh, I forgot to go shopping because, let's say if it's a Monday morning, let's say you forgot to buy your favorite coffee, you have completely run out of your favorite brand, and this is the first time that you miss your coffee. So, but immediately what happens to you? You totally forgot that not a single morning during the last 15 years did you miss that. You never missed it, but up until this morning you missed it. However, you forgot that you already had it for the last 15 years. Meaning, what happens is, if not consciously, subconsciously, so you are telling yourself for the last, you never had that coffee in your life for the last 15 years. By getting agitated by not having the coffee this morning, you totally forgot. You forgot to appreciate the coffee, the same coffee that you enjoyed for the last 15 years. So that what happens, then you are back to square one. In case you had been practicing nekkhamma, and then you have gone into back, you are back to square one, and you have to start they come all over again from ABC, from alpha again, you are almost close to omega. So you have to go start the practice all over because you are back to square one. So even if, let's say, it could happen to a monk or a spiritual person, anyone. Now, even if you are able to make up your mind when it comes to scarcity or not having something that you used to enjoy, let's say you make up your mind when you miss certain things in your life, you are okay because you are practicing Nekkhamma. Now, whereas only that the moment you miss your favorite coffee and you got agitated by that, you got afflicted with that, thereby you have already put your entire spiritual practice in jeopardy. Because one single feeling of agitation can ruin your inner peace. So when it comes to practicing Nekkhamma, the first thing to do is that you deal with the most unnecessary attachments. Remember, we did talk about managing attachment rather than removing them. Attachments are fundamentally neither good nor bad. They are natural, but based on your purpose of life, maybe based on your spiritual practice, you need to manage your attachments. Now, when you practice Nekkhamma, how you start that is, first you choose the most unnecessary attachments. Once I work with some adults and children, some social research in how to say experiment, not really experiment, that's applied Nekkhamma. So meaning we practice Nekkhamma. I ask in different two different retreats, one for adults, children and young adults, the other one for adults. I ask them to list their favorite things, well, their favorite attachments. You wouldn't believe that the shorter list included like 30, 29 or 30 things. Shortest list. Can you imagine how the longest list? So many things. Sometimes some people, the most fascinating thing is, they had listed the same thing in different terms. The same thing in different terms. So that we didn't. Then what I wouldn't I never let anyone else so I knew then I collected them. I didn't disclose whose note was that, whose list was that, because I had to safeguard the privacy and their dignity. And somehow I mix up, then quite randomly I'll pick a list and I will just go through it. And later when I explain the whole list, and everybody understand that they basically have like more or less maybe five or six attachments in their life. But they would always, they listed the same thing in different ways. Meaning you need the same thing, you need to enjoy the same thing in a different way. So I asked them to cross out. I returned the lists. I asked them to choose the most favorite ones. Interestingly, a young lady, maybe she was 20, maybe 26. She started her job like 3 years ago after college graduation, and then she said in her note, she said, instead of attachments, I would like to call it purpose and target. As long as I make money to pay my rental, apartment rental, as long as I make money to pay my phone bill, as long as I am able to buy food for my puppy and gas, or meaning in American terms, petrol, and then my grocery. That's all I need. There were five things. And so without then. When I collected all the notes again, when I announced that someone only had five things, wants to achieve five things in her life, and then everybody would start raising, anyone else having this number of limited number of attachments or purpose, and then Well, and the hands were start raising, and everyone started raising their hand. Well, we all need, those are the five things, five basic things. Everyone has four basic things. Then, during the whole retreat, we asked them to make the most unnecessary things. And then toward the evening, they were able to come up with a whole list of things, unnecessary attachments. And that time, and in between, they meditated a lot. They meditated a lot. Maybe they have five sessions again during that 5 6 hour meditation retreat. So toward the evening, and they had been able to reduce, shorten the list. And then when I asked them individually, so we call come attend personal sessions in a later day. We had like 30 minutes for everyone, and they said that in my meditation, this is Bhante, this is what I felt. At times I felt ashamed. I asked myself why I need such a big, so many things. Then I noticed that I had so many fake attachments, and I had also noticed that I had listed the same thing in different terms. If we use an analogy. Now, if you leave your food leftovers in the kitchen, what will happen? And you would say that, and then you purposely don't remove the food leftovers, and you put them in a trash bag or trash can bin, and you leave in your kitchen, and you know that you should remove it, and you didn't remove it. Why? You thought to yourself, well, I spent so much money for this grocery, for this food. I couldn't eat everything, so that I put some certain things in the garbage, and so that next morning you come there. This wouldn't literally happen. This is an analogy. So the next morning you walk to the kitchen, you still see that it is starting to get stinky. Now it has started stinking, and you keep the food left over to rot, so that maybe toward that evening. What if you keep it like 48 hours? You enter not only your kitchen, the entire house will start stinking. So, the same way, first we need to remove the most unnecessary attachments from our mind. So, that's why it's always is better to ask why before how, as we always say. That's the way. Most people start planning. That's called always, it is recommended in spirituality. Ask yourself, why before you ask yourself how. If you start with how right, then you start planning. But you don't have to go for planning when you if you ask yourself why. Do I need this? Why should I need this? Why I go for this? Now that's how you start practicing Nekkhamma, giving up. So when it comes to giving up, and so as I said last week, all these 10 paramitas are interconnected. When you practice one certain paramita, you can also with you can practice some other paramitas effortlessly at the same time. For example, now we talked about sila the last time, sila. Now, sila is to pacify, right? It comes from seal. The root seal to pacify. So when you observe precepts, you stop feeling guilty because you become moral or ethical, so that you can avoid. That's the purpose of precepts. And then let's say you come for a retreat, and you have your favorite corner that you would always choose to sit, or maybe you'll. This wouldn't literally happen to you. I'm just saying this. But I know some people who actually do that. They say you always keep an eye on your favorite cushion. So that this today you came to a meditation, and somebody had arrived before you did, and they had grabbed your cushion. Did I say your cushion? Yes. Yeah, it's my cushion. For that, all the cushions are in a public place. There's no my cushion, your cushion. There are cushions. so that you feel kind of agitated. And so sometimes I have seen these, I mean, people doing this, and then you walk to that person and say, "Ah, oh, you have come early before me today. I was a little bit late today. Otherwise, you should I sit in here." So that, oh, okay, right. Yeah, I came a little bit early, and the other party ignores you. Okay, I should, and then you start walking back, saying, "Oh, well, I should come the next time a little early." So that's why you show your agitation. You show your agitation probably for the duration of the meditation. You wouldn't be meditate. Instead of meditating, you would be simply trying to justify your wordings. Why you walk to that person? Why you said that? And I did that because you should ask my question. Or is it my question? Yeah, it's my question because nobody would use it. And then at that point, even if you observe, basically you have, during the meditation, you would have lost your temper. And there's no, your heart is not at peace anymore. You still observe the precept, the precepts were unable to pacify your heart. So that you felt, throughout the retreat, you felt agitated. You felt afflicted with your inability to grab the same cushion that day. And you forgot that for up to this moment, every time you come to the retreat, and always you were able to get that cushion, except today. At that point also, you go back on your past present experience of having the same favorite cushion, and then what happens? You reverse your present experience of using that beautiful or more cozy, more comfortable cushion. So that is why Nekkhama is very difficult. We go back to our past and we always justify. We justify our needs. But whereas there's no when you are practicing Nekkhama, there's no room in your mind for there shouldn't be any room in your mind for justification. However, we continue to justify the given the moment, within a split of a second, we do the justification and say it's mine. Again, the Nekkhama is also connected with Dana again. And we already talked about the relation between Dana Paramita and Nekkhama and Sila Paramita and Nekkhama in general. And also, we can understand Nekkhama to in a different way when you compare the self identity with Nekkhama, Sattva again, Sattva, Sanskrit, which is Sanskrit, or Sattva, which is Pali. Sattva again means, as you know, is attachment. Our self attachment is our self identity. So that we remain subjective. We look at anything subjectively, not objectively. So that is why there is called higher meditation for vipassana too. As we remember, we discussed that vipassana too. In vipassana, instead of calling it something like this, at least, let's say someone grab your cushion. Even though it's not your cushion, and you still call it your cushion because you had claimed ownership, because that's the cushion that you've been using for the last maybe 3 years since you started coming for the retreat. Okay, my cushion. And then you in your meditation, it's not my cushion. I had only simply used it. I have been simply using it. Yeah, it's not my cushion. It is a cushion. But today somebody grabbed it. Did I say somebody grabbed it? In order to grab, it should have belonged to me then again. Oh, no, it doesn't belong to me. And then again, you go back and because instantaneously you justify your subjective nature. Then, and then you would say, take a deep breath and say, while the other party who got the cushion is enjoying their meditation, I am suffering in here. And sometimes you slowly open your eyes and look at that person. And when you look at that person's face and he or she looks so peaceful or happy, meditating, or sad, yeah, poor me, I'm suffering in here. Then you close your eyes and go back to your meditation and say, Why should I suffer? It's not my question, finally. It's someone else's. And then if you can make up your mind, but you get a little boost of in your Nekamba Paramita. So now that is how you practice Paramita. So that is why it's very difficult to practice. Now, so it takes a Bodhisattva. Remember, we discussed the term Bodhisattva, right? Bodhisattva, the only kind of sattva that is who is attached not to anything worldly, but to Bodhi, which is the path out of all the attachment, Bodhi, awakening, enlightenment. So then as a sattva, then you think about your, then you bring your motivation, your set motivation of enlightenment into play. And then you start meditating on your bodhicitta then. Then say, how could I achieve my enlightenment when I failed to accept that it's not my cushion again? And then sometimes you, in people, it takes people a long time to pass. So why I was going to say, it takes many eons. It takes a bodhisattva many eons and an indefinite period of time, maybe so many years, to come to achieve a satisfactory level of nekkhamma or any paramita. At the beginning, during the first, on the primary level, your paramitas are just like a carving that you do in water. Okay, you go to the beach, and you with your finger, you draw a carving. You make a carving in water. You first you start drawing, making a stroke, drawing a line, so that the line disappears before you have drawn it, because the water cannot retain your carving, drawing. But you, in your mind, there's a carving. So mentally. It is already in your mind. It's a beautiful carving, and you start making doing the carving in water, but the water cannot retain it, right? Which is liquid, it's fluid. Then what happens? You decide to do the carving on the beach, carving in sand. You do carving instead of water. You do sand, and you start doing the carving in sand. And then when you do this sand carving in sand, it stays longer. At least the wash, so the waves or the water washes it away. So you can retain it. And then what happens is there's a rock on the beach. There's a rock. And you climb onto the rock, and you see the flat surface. And that time you bring a tool, and you start carving, doing the carving in stone. And it would remain, it would stay there like forever. You started with doing the carving in water, then in sand, then in rock, in stone. So that is how our Paramita practice is first. During the first you try, and then you may fail, or maybe you don't achieve much. If I use the positive terms, you wouldn't achieve that much achievement. How to say experience, positive experience in Paramita. And once you experience something, drawing a carving in sand in water is like. You are determined in as part of a spiritual, you are affiliated with a spiritual group, and you walk to the retreat with a firm resolution that even if all my opponents come to the retreat, I wouldn't get agitated by their presence. And then you are determined to do that. Before you had stopped, before you had made that assumption, made that conclusion, made that resolution, your worst opponent pops up. And look, you don't say something, but sometimes you make a sound. You see, that is the moment. So what happens to your paramita? It's gone. It disappeared even before you had started it. That's how difficult it is. So that is why it takes a bodhisattva many eons, maybe many millennia, to come to a satisfactory level of paramita. So that is why Buddha says it's very extremely difficult for someone aspiring to be the Sammāsambuddha to complete the paramita. That's why it takes longer. But it, depending on how dedicated you are, as we talked about in our previous sessions, right, Bodhisattva Maitreya started his paramita long before Siddhartha Gautama did. Bodhisattva Gautama did. Remember, we talked about Siddhartha, Maitreya, and the starving tigers. Remember, we did talk about that when they were born. They were born into the same locality, and one day, and they were in the same group, and they were practicing. They were two bodhisattvas, and when they were cutting through a jungle, going somewhere, and then that's what they encountered that hungry tigress, and she had just delivered her babies, cubs, and she couldn't even stand up. She was very weak, and that is when they started talking about that this tigress is hungry. This tiger mother is hungry. We should do something. And then probably, let's say, and then they would either thought about sacrificing their life to practice the highest level of dharma. So, and then they both thought about it. So before Bodhisattva Maitreya decided, and then he was now closing his eyes to decide, and then he heard a sound. And when he happened to look at the tigers, he had already started feeding on Bodhisattva Gautama. He had already sacrificed him. He had jumped onto the tigers because the tigers already killed him instantaneously. He already started feeding on the Bodhisattva's body, and that gave him a paramita boost, as I said, so he could achieve a higher level of dana. Paramita instantaneously. The same way, the negative side of it is, as I said, that because when you are determined to accept or to welcome in your mind, emotionally welcome your opponent to the retreat, the moment your opponent can, aha, he's here. Ah, I don't like him. So it's both negative at that point. All your hard earned paramita energy, which was not that much, is gone. So that is how Nekkhamma is very difficult. Any question regarding Nekkhamma before we continue? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the paramattha paramita. Remember, each paramita has three levels: normal, higher, highest. For example, dana, like you give something, maybe food or something, you make a donation to someone, you feed someone, you perform charity in your day-to-day life. That's dana. Even the normal level of the lowest level of dana paramita is very difficult. Why? It's very difficult to give. Remember, we talked about three terms: dana, adana, and upadana. We talked about the last week. Dana, adana, and upadana, giving, grabbing, keeping what you have grabbed towards yourself. Three things, the process. And then you donate your organs, starts with blood donation. You donate your blood, you donate your organs, and that is the second higher level of upa paramita. Upa means of yourself, close to yourself. What you have as part of yourself, you donate. That means your limbs. And then paramattha in the absolute, the highest level, meaning you also donate your life, sacrifice your, that's the highest one. So in different levels. And let's move to the second one. So the third one, that's the third paramita. The fourth one is panya. Anya, so fourth paramita. Pronounce P-A-N with diacritical mark tilde on top, so it's pronounced Nya, and again Panya, P-A-N with diacritical mark tilde on top, repeat A long A Panya. Yes, Panya. That's per plus per plus nya. Nya is the root. Nya. In Sanskrit, you write it as G and then N, G and nya, in Sanskrit. That's the reason why I'm getting both terms on the board. First one is nya, N with the diacritical mark tilde on top, so it's pronounced nya, and then R long A, nya, that which is Pali. And this the Sanskrit form is nya, G, nya, J, sorry, G and nya, nya. What's the reason? To know. Nya means to know. See here, G in nya and K in no in Sanskrit, in English, which is silent, they come from the same root in, because English is an Indo-European language. So the English has the Indian connection. So most words, most roots of the English language come from Sanskrit. Nya, nya, no. In ancient times, it used to be ngo. And then Siskol, so K is silent, no. So that's the connection. Nya to know. Root nya means to know, knowing. And there are three words, I think, in one of the other, in some other courses, we talked about three words that we come from, that comes from this root, nya, that is sanya, vinyana, panya. Sanya, vinyana, panya. Wherever there's a mention of knowing, feeling, especially knowing something, it comes from the root nya, to know. So sanya means perception, to be aware of. To be aware of, to know about what's going on. That means perception, nya, sanya. Sa means active. For now, remember this. We will discuss these three in one of our future lessons. We are going to have a whole theme on perception. And there will be so many nya that we have to discuss. Starting from sanya to the neva sanya, na sanyayatana, the highest world of the formless existence, is one of the Brahma worlds. There are so many nya things that we're going to discuss. For now, just remember this, that vinyana. Vinyana is so sanya is perception, that we remain connected with sense objects. So sanya, remain connected, interconnected, even in our dreams, sanya. So the meaning perception. In vijnana is all about making assumptions and conclusions out of our perceptions, sanya. And panya is not being biased of assumptions and conclusions that we make. Because of that connection, I listed all the three terms here, because our whole focus is on the word panya. So we remain connected with the outside world through our sense faculties. In other words, we gather sensory experience, and that's through sanya. And once, as we gather information or data, we filter them and make assumptions or conclusions. That is because of a certain area of our consciousness that is called vijnana. And then once we make assumptions and conclusions, we start acting in a biased way based on our assumptions and conclusions. Whereas you stop being biased of your pro or against your conclusions, thanks to panya. So that's the meaning. Per means elevated. Per prefix per means higher or elevated. And panya, so that's why panya is always explained. So panya is the English panya translates into English as wisdom. That's the general translation, wisdom. However, wisdom doesn't really reflect what panya means in Pali. So a better term would be still it's knowledge, because it comes from nya, but it is unbiased knowledge. When your knowledge is free from biases or bias-free knowledge, that is called wisdom. Now, if you are a wise person, right? If I used non-gendered language like wise man or wise woman, wise person. Okay. So, when two parties are debating or arguing with each other, and they try, as they try to get their own point across, that's what happens in arguments. Right? Whether or not the point is valid, you still try your best to get the point across. So now, that is typical of arguments. Now, there are five people, I would say, there are 10 people, or maybe 10 people, or let's say 11 people, just make it a good number. Five people, the group of five people are arguing with the other group of, that's also comprised of five people. And as everyone start raising their voice, almost approaching each other to hit, and some even saying that I feel like coming to and punching in your face and all that. That's how it happens in arguments. And there was another person, the 11th one, he's silent. And he would come in between, and he would use his mudras or gestures, stop and calm down. It's been 2 hours since you started this argument. So no, neither party has been able to get the point across. Now stop. And stop and listen. Now, listening, when you practice panya paramita, listening, it is first and foremost. That is the first step of panya paramita. Instead of talking, you listening becomes your favorite practice. You listen. So wise people listen more than they talk. That's, and you can refer it to the English saying, right? The classical English saying, empty vessel make noise. Yeah, makes noise. Yeah, empty vessel makes noise. The more empty it is, it makes more noise. Most noise, yeah, the empty, yeah, make the most noise, yeah. Yeah, empty one makes the most noise. So there's nothing in. There's no substance. No, there's no substance, and you don't know what you are saying. So that is, that English saying, proverb, fits in here when it comes to panya. So that's why Buddha recommends listening is one of the key things in practice in panya paramita. Listening. Is it okay if I erase these terms? Panya. So, sutta. So, remember the third type of Buddha that we discussed on the first day or the second day, at the first day. Sambuddha, Pacheka Buddha, Sambuddha, and Sutta Buddha, right? Sutta Buddha. You become enlightened by listening to to whom? To a Sammāsambuddha. The third type of Buddha is they are also called arahats. You become an arahat or fully enlightened, being part of the company, the assembly of the Buddha. Meaning, the Buddha doesn't have to be physically. Meaning, you study the Buddha's Dharma, you study Dhamma, and then you become enlightened. So that is what meaning listening by sutta. Sutta means to listening. That means you practice. In listening, you always, when you read Dhamma, and you always reflect the Dhamma, in your, you use it in both ways. You reflect your attitude, your feelings, your tendencies, inner tendencies in the Dhamma, and then you try, then you use the reflect Dhamma in your feelings. You do that both ways. No, so that is how it is explained in the sutras. And this is also called what we did in one of our Wednesday or Saturday sessions. We talked about mirror of Dharma, remember? Mirror of Dhamma. So you consider Dhamma a mirror, and you see yourself in the Dhamma mirror and see how attractive your character is. In the physical mirror, you see your figure. In the Dhamma mirror, you see your character. A character, and you and it's a better understood with reference to this statement. Apadana, this one statement. Apadana sobhini, I'll explain it later. Panya, apadana, APADA, long A, NA, apadana. Next word is sobhini, 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 sobhini. Panya, PANNA, panya again, and you know how to spell that. Apadana sobhini panya. Wisdom beautifies character. This is one of the most popular school mottos in Sri Lanka. Most national schools, public school, they use this saying of the Buddha as their motto, school motto. Apadana sobhini panya. Wisdom beautifies character. Wisdom beautifies character. So, and when you talk about someone, with reference to someone's mannerisms, and what a character, that's how you say, right? You never get a certificate of your figure, right? You get a certificate of character, right? Character certificate, your testimony that you get from a church or a temple or anyone. That's about your your morality, your mannerisms and all that. So, panya. Panya is considered the principle. Panya is what beautifies your character. So, and when you sanya, vijnana, panya. Oh, I missed another word for this. Jnana. I should have mentioned that. Jnana. That's another word missing. One of the Nya words, sanya, vijnana, panya, jnana. Jnana is also applicable here. Jnana means knowledge. Knowledge in a particular area. Knowledge. Knowledge and wisdom are two different things. Now, if you are a medical doctor, you have jnana, knowledge, medical knowledge. If I'm a monk, then my knowledge is called knowledge of the Dhamma or the religious knowledge. If you are an engineer, knowledge in engineering. When you are specialized in a certain area, it's called jnana. And Buddha is said to have acquired 73 jnanas. 73 jnanas. It's not 73 panya. Panya is one. Seventy-three jnanas means knowledge in a particular area. For example, Buddha's Dibba Chakku Jnana, his divine eye. Dibba Sota Jnana, his divine ear. He could hear anything from the universe. Dibba Chakku Jnana, he can see things through his divine eye. So they are all jnanas. Jnana means knowledge in a certain area. Whereas, let's say, now, there's a meeting of professionals. They are specialized in different jnanas, right? And they are trying to pass a resolution regarding something for their organization, something. And all of us, instead of listening to everyone, they start arguing with each other, trying to get their point across, and everyone in the group thinks that their point is valid, not everyone else's now. At that point, but they are all specialized in, they come from different backgrounds, they are specialized in different jnanas of knowledge, they have knowledge in different areas. Among them is someone who doesn't speak that much. He had the whole time to this moment, he had been listening. And then he stands, some say, stop that. Now, if you want to come to a resolution, pass the resolution, we have to respect each other and share, listen to each other's ideas and respect each other's ideas, and let's discuss one by one. And we will see whether we can incorporate these ideas into one so that we can come up with the general resolution that is acceptable to everyone, or otherwise you wouldn't be able to make a conclusion like that. At that point, that the person who stood up the last and who now started talking to others, now he's also jnana. He specialized in a certain profession, so he sees a jnana. But at this point, he is showing the group his panya, wisdom. He's not taking sides with anyone. He's not being biased. Now he's at that point, he's having panya. Pa again means elevated. So now, when you practice panya paramita, you have the same mindset, there's no progress there. Through meditation, you need to elevate your way of thinking. You have to enhance your cognitive ability. Enhancement of cognitive ability is also called, you need to have a shift in your cognition. You need to have a shift in your, perspective. Maybe it's called the perspective. That's the standard Buddhist terms called perspective. Perspective in Pali is dasana. D-A-S-S-A-N-A, dasana. Dasana is perspective. Now, during the first few, I mean, it had been like 3 days since I landed in LA way back in 99. So that a girl from a college made a phone call, then I answered the phone, and then she asked, is this a Buddhist temple? I said, yes, ma'am. Are you a monk? Yes, I am. You know what? Can I come more? Can you give me an appointment? Why would you, may I know why? I think I had some perspective on my life, but I lost it. I need some perspective. So now that is, then I like that term. Yeah, in your conversation, you use the word perspective. You need to regain your lost perspective. We all need perspective. Now, remember in the Buddha's first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, in the discourse of setting the wheel of Dharma in motion, the Buddha says, Dasanang Udapadi. Dasana appeared to Kondanya, the youngest of the five ascetics, Dasanang Udapadi. That's the word Dasana. Dasana, in Sanskrit, it is Darshana. In Sinhalese and Sanskrit, in many other Indian languages, is Darshana. Now, Darshana has a physical meaning. For example, when you go to your temple, especially in Hinduism, when you go to see your god, you say, I'm going to I'm going for darshan. I go in for darshan, they say. Darshan is come from Sanskrit, Hindi, but with darshan, like in Hindi, you drop it. Most words are consonant ending in Hindi. So you speak Hindi. I just know a little bit. So darshan, dasana is the Pali word. Darshan is to see the, to have the sight of a physical, the physical image, the image of a god or a divine being, deity, like for Krishna, Rama, Sita, so different gods. So, and by the way, according to, in Sri Lanka, we believe in many different, in Sinhalese, they say, Tistankotya Devuru, it number 33. Actually, it comes from Hinduism. In Hinduism, you believe 33 million gods. In, that's where the number 33 comes into Sinhalese Buddhism in Sri Lanka, from India. So, now, in general, you see, you have dasana or darshan, or darshana means to see, to see this, to see the image of the goddess or god or deity itself or himself. Whereas, and Buddha used the word, the same word darshana, but in Pali, dasana, to see the true nature of your existence. That's what dasana means. So dasana is always, dasana appeared, and Buddha made a proclamation of joy that dasana, kondanya gottis dasana, because he achieved the first level of enlightenment, having seen the true reality, true nature of his empirical existence. So dasana, meaning perspective. Now, dasana is directly connected with the idea of panya in Buddhist spirituality. Dasana, that you need to have dasana. And if you use another analogy, you become like a hiker. Hiker's analogy. Now, you like hiking, and you start your climbing a formidable mountain, a tall mountain. So the higher you go, you can have a better view down there. So if you make all the way up to the mountain top, and that is called the zenith, you make it to the summit, you make it to the zenith, and you make it to the mountain top. And so the higher you go, so the mountain becomes more and more slim to the point. And so that when you make it to the top of the mountain, and you can so have a better view down there, probably you can see, probably you should be able to see a 360 view of the of maybe the jungle, cities, and all that down at the bottom of the mountain, at and around the mountain. So that is how wisdom is, panya is explained in Buddhism. And there's a verse in the Dhammapada also. Pabbatatto bhummatte dhiro bale avikati, meaning from a mountain top, you look down, and you see there are so many bale, means unwise, to use the politically correct language, unwise people down there. Actually, the original meaning is fools. But use Bala. There are so many unwise people down there. And there was another analogy is that there were so many visitors. Now, they went on a picnic to see a beautiful mountain. This was the first time they were there. That also comes from the sutras, from the Pali canon. And then they got bewildered by the magnificent nature of the formidable mountain, and they couldn't believe that the mountain was such a beautiful thing. And all of a sudden they talked about its height, and how you would feel if you get, how you make it up to the top mountain top, and all that. There were so many arguments, and then said, no, it shouldn't be that cold up there, and no, it should be extremely cold because of the mountain top. And I also see the snow. And there's a little something that looks like a glacier as well. And people would trying to convince each other's ideas, convince each other. And everyone was arguing with each other. Then what happened? There was one man standing behind. He wouldn't say a word. And all of a sudden, he had a sigh of relief, like, so everyone heard that. And they all turned to him and said, hey, so what do you think about this mountain? He said, I have nothing to say. Why? Because we are always trying to talk. See, why did you come here if you don't have a say? I have not only come here today, I have already made up there and I have climbed this mountain before. So that's why he didn't have a say. That's why he was silent, because he had already experienced the mountain top. He had nothing to say and he had wisdom. Everyone else, he was wise, the everyone was unwise. So that's another, that is my most favorite explanation of my most favorite analogy of wisdom. And then the more wise you become, the more panya you acquire, you become more silent, you become more observant. Panya. So, but when you are in a group practice, you always need to listen to each other and continue the dialogue. That's wherein you come across this another statement. Sakachayang is on. That's good enough for recording. I mean, you don't have to write it down. I don't want to fill your notes with Pali, too much Pali. Sakachayang bhikkhave panya veditabbo. Wisdom comes from dialogue. When you are in a group practice, you always need to discuss, but that, provided that you listen more than you speak. It's always good to ask everyone else, leaving your ideas behind. That's why I like the round table idea, right? The idea of round table. When you sit around a round table, there's no first and last. Everyone can see everyone else. In meditation also, when I have meditation with just a limited number of people, I would always ask them to sit in a circle, or at least in a semicircle, so that everyone can see everyone else's faces. So, and that's called sakaccha. That's called dialogue. It's sakaccha. Now, so that is in group practice. The more you learn, the more wise you become, more silent and more observant. And that is when Buddha didn't mostly approve one of the well-known debaters. His name was Satchaka, Saccaka, Satchaka. Because of Satchaka, you got sutras that are very long in the Digha Nikaya, in the long length sayings. Satchaka was a logician. He was a well-known logician. Now, and elsewhere Buddha says, logics are valid, but logics fail to give you the right knowledge. So that's when Buddha explains Dhamma, he used this word. Atakkavachara, long word, Atakkavachara. Takka here. A-T-A-K-K-A, long A, V-A-C-A-R-A. A plus T-A-K-K-A, Takka. A-V-A-C-A-R-A, Avachara. A plus Takka plus Avachara. A plus Takka, T-A-K-K, Takka plus Avachara, A-V-A-C-A-R-A, Avachara. Avachara means to behave, to be engaged in. Avachara. Takka in Sanskrit, Taraka, meaning logics. Logics. A means not. Now, Takka means, that means logics. Avachara means to be engaged. Or to use. Means not. Now, and Buddha called Dhamma is atakkhavacara. Dhamma is beyond logics. You cannot achieve nirvana by logics, by logical thinking. Logics are valid only to the extent that you need to reason out certain things. You need to reason, you need the reasoning. But reasoning has its own limits. So in logics, you can prove anything right. You can prove right as wrong and wrong as right. So you can very easily prove. For example, you can prove an apple tree is a mango tree. Apple tree is a mango tree. Why? Apple is a tree. Mango is a tree. Both are trees. So that there's nothing, no difference between apple and mango. That's logic. So Buddha didn't approve, and Buddha was a very careful listener. So at times, Satchaka was so elated, he was jubilant, he was so elated, and he simply walked away. Buddha can't beat me. And sometimes some unenlightened monks were kind of sad, and they would approach Buddha. You should have answered his question. As he said, even if I repeated the same answer, but he wouldn't get it because he uses logics. So atakkhavacara means not takka. You cannot comprehend the Dhamma by logics. If you can achieve salvation by logics, and the world should be filled with enlightened people today, right? You can logic. You can prove anything with logics. So that's one of the reasons. Instead, you need to practice for yourself. So that's when meditation becomes part of Panya Paramita. Because when you practice meditation, you can very easily find answers for many burning questions for which you are unable to find answers even from 1,000 books. Thank you.